The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, and the Dayton Metro Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WISO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome back to the program today Steve Barry. His new novel, The 14th Colony, just came out today. He joins us by telephone from beautiful Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hello, Steve.
Well, good to be here, and it is quite beautiful here. It's a beautiful day.
I'll bet it is. I love Tulsa. So you're starting your book tour in Tulsa. Wow.
I actually started yesterday in St. Louis. We did an event.
Okay.
And so we've come here today and to do a History Matters event tonight where we're going to be raising money for a local restoration project.
Wonderful. Well, I know History Matters is very important to you, and we can talk about that a little bit later. But first, let's talk about your new novel, The 14th Colony. This is another Cotton Malone thriller. Tell us about this series and about your protagonist.
Well, Cotton is a retired Justice Department agent. He lives in Copenhagen now, and he runs an old bookshop there. And he tends to get drawn back into his former profession, you know, constantly as in each one of the novels. He was created in the Templar legacy about 10 years ago, and there's now been, this is the 11th Cotton Malone adventure with the 14th Colony. And his world has changed, adapted, grown. Lots going on in that time period. And this time he gets caught up in something quite cataclysmic involving the inauguration of a new president and a flaw that exists in the 20th Amendment to the Constitution. And so he gets wrapped up in a little bit of this Cold War intrigue that's been left over and in a 48-hour adventure that takes him down to 12 noon on January 20th.
And a lot of this intrigue originated with a former leader of the Soviet Union. And it was a guy that was just kind of a blip on the screen. Most of us don't think about him too much, but this is a fellow who used to be the head of the KGB, and then he had a very brief rule before he died, a guy named Yuri Andropov. Tell us about him.
Well, he was – it's very important what happened there because you, Reagan was – you know, Reagan was working the Soviet Union over. I mean, he was basically sending him into bankruptcy and sending him, you know, to chasing all of these illusions of the Star Wars missile defense shield and all. And Andropov was the one guy he was a little bit afraid of. He was a guy that he didn't think he could really maneuver. He didn't think he could fool. He thought he might become a problem. And Andropov would have been a problem, but thank goodness he died. You know, cancer killed him. You know, he only served about 14 months, and he, with his death, that brought on Gorbachev. And with Gorbachev, you know, everything changed. And so, yes, that's all dealt with in the novel. And I've, you know, the reader will get a full appreciation of what Andropov's death truly meant to the fall of the Soviet Union.
This series always has a solid foundation in history. And you also educate your readers by plumbing the depths of history and finding these obscure and curious facts that really set the framework for your stories. And this book is another one of those. And the title refers to one of these facts. And I don't know if you even want to give that away. It's kind of a spoiler. We have to read quite a bit of ways in the book before we figure out what the 14th Colony refers to. Should we keep that secret?
No, I can tell that.
Okay.
I've spoken about it. There were supposed to be, you know, 14 colonies. The fledgling United States wanted the 14th colony, and it was supposed to be Canada. They wanted Canada to come into the new United States. The very first thing we did in the American Revolution, the first act we took was to invade Canada. We tried to take Quebec. We were defeated, and we had to retreat. In the War of 1812, one of the first things we did is we invaded Canada. We got beat again. Canada is the only nation on earth that has defeated the United States twice on the battlefield. And this whole concept of the 14th Colony, it was fascinating, but was even more fascinating is in the 1930s, we actually formulated an invasion plan of Canada, and we just didn't put it on paper. We actually did things in preparation for such an invasion plan. And if Hitler had taken Britain in the Battle of Britain, we would have taken Canada immediately to prevent him from using it as a staging area against us. And that particular secret invasion plan stayed secret until 1974. And all of that is incorporated into the novel. It all forms part of the plot that Cotton gets caught up in.
And wasn't there also an attempt or a thought of taking over again in like 1903?
That was the initial thought process, yes. And that was more, I mean, I don't know if that was a serious attempt. I think there was a lot going on there because Canada was very close to Japan at the time. And at that particular time, we were not close to Japan, and we were a little bit nervous about the relationship with them. I think that was more a military exercise than anything else. But in the 1930s, those 1903 plans were incorporated into a much more serious invasion plan, because the plan was, is if we had taken Canada, we were not going to give it back.
And in 1903, we were very fresh from our acquisitions, in a way, of places like the Philippines and Cuba and Hawaii.
Yeah, Manifest Destiny was in full swing at this point.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we had this invincibility that we could do anything. Not entirely true, and we, you know, that we could do anything. And taking Canada at that point would have been a problem. Taking it during World War II would have been a matter of national defense.
Steve Barry joins us. His new Cotton Malone novel is The 14th Colony. And you love to shift the action very quickly, and this story has a lot of different actions from different viewpoints, different people experiencing them. Let's talk about some of these other characters that surround Cotton Malone.
Well, there's in this novel, of course, Cassiopeia Vitt returns. She has come back. She is a love interest of Cotton that I ended that relationship in some degree a couple of books ago, but I knew she was going to come back. And so she makes a grand entrance here and returns. And I think their relationship, I think I will allow it now to keep growing a little bit, so to speak, and not mess with it quite as much as I've been in recent times. We have another character, Luke Daniels, who I created a few books ago, who is back. Of course, Stephanie Nail is back. The most challenging thing, though, in doing one of my books is creating the bad guy. And here, Zorin, the ex-KGB agent, is a sort of a melding of a whole bunch of ex-KGB agents. I read a lot about them, and I took a little bit from everybody to create this guy. And there are people still out there that, for them, the Cold War has never ended. It's still there. And Zorin resents what happened to the Soviet Union. He resents that his world was destroyed. He resents that his life was destroyed. You know, his whole, everything he knew was taken from him. And he wants to pay us back. He wants to give us one last parting shot. And while I was fortunate that there are some real things that still exist that are out there, things that are very scary. An example would be is that the Soviet Union produced around 250 suitcase-sized nuclear weapons. To this day, not one of those has ever been found. That's a very interesting fact. And so I wove all of that into the novel, along with some other things left over from the Cold War.
I'm sure some of our listeners, when they heard your description of Zorin, the fanatical former KGB agent who wants to keep the Cold War going, they probably thought of another former KGB agent named Vladimir Putin.
Yes, there is something of him in there, except he's not, overtly moved forward to pay us back. He's not been on any type of revenge in some respects. He just wants to resurrect what used to be. The problem is that the Soviet Union was a failed nation. It was a failed concept. It had no chance of succeeding, and it collapsed and imploded on itself in a matter of about 8 or 9 years once the pressure was put on them in the right way by John Paul II and by Ronald Reagan. It basically imploded over a period of about 6 to 7 years. So it's not a, it was not a stable society. It was not one that, that had the, that could stand the test of time. And the new Russian state is a similar way. It has similar defects there, that this just doesn't function well. It doesn't work well. It's not meant to compete at the level that, say, we compete at. And there's a, there is a, there is a difference between us and them.
Your book, The 14th Colony, has a diabolical plot that involves these suitcase nukes that you referred to. Let's talk about these nuclear bombs and how they worked and how they had to be kept constantly charged. Do you think there's some out there charging right now that are still?
Well, that's the thing. That's why there really aren't. There's not a lot of concern. Congress in 1999 recognized these weapons existed and considered them a credible threat. But the problem is they have to be hooked to a constant power source. They run off batteries, and if the batteries go down, the device basically is rendered useless at that point. It cannot be recharged to back up. So in my case, I had to figure out a way to keep, a couple of these babies charged up over a long period of time. And I worked out a plausible way where that made sense. In the real world, that may not be that's probably not possible, and that's why you probably don't hear a lot about them, because they were rendered useless a long, long time ago. But there's still, the fact was, is that 250 of these weapons was produced, and we've still never seen a single one of them, not one.
Well, one will turn up on eBay eventually, saying that it's been decommissioned.
Yeah, we have a drawing of one, and that's the what I use to describe it in the book. There was a drawing of one that Congress used, and they actually made a mock-up of one. So you can actually go online and find a picture of that mock-up.
Uh-huh. You start the book with a prologue in which you have a meeting between President Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul II, and this meeting really happened, didn't it?
It definitely did. On June the 7th of 1982, yes, the Pope and the President met alone for 50 minutes. It's never happened before or since in history where this has happened. They wanted to meet alone. There was no agenda, no notes, no nothing. Both men never spoke of what was talked about in that meeting ever. Historians seem to think that they made a deal that day, that John Paul would do his part and Ronald Reagan would do his part, and together, independent of one another, they would bring the Soviet Union down. Now, we don't know if they did that. We have no clue, but we do know for the next 6 years that is exactly what they did. They did work independent of one another and tirelessly went after the Soviet Union, and of course it eventually collapsed in 1991.
I think anybody who reads The 14th Colony is going to think, Steve Barry really admires Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul II, and that's very clear when we read it.
And those two, in this instance, very much so. These men were focused. I mean, they were very focused on this objective that they wanted. John Paul hated the Soviets for what they did to Poland. And then they tried to kill him. I mean, they sent an assassin to kill him. I mean, he had every reason to pay them back. And Ronald Reagan had a deep, deep, abiding resentment to communism and to the Soviet Union. And these two men, to their credit, set their sights on a goal, and they stuck with it, and they succeeded.
And was it the Star Wars program that you refer to as the one that actually was not possible, but they pretended that they were working on it, and that kept the Soviets?
They did work on it.
Okay.
They worked on it because the idea was to try to acquire some new technology, little pieces of technology here and there, but to create a weapons defense system that would shoot down a missile that was completely beyond the technology of the time. No one seriously thought that could ever be done, but they never said that. In fact, they said just the opposite of that. And the plan was to convince the Soviet Union that it was possible. Hopefully they'd buy into it, and they'd want to build their own. And since it's not possible to do it, they would basically piss away, huge amounts of money, huge amounts of money. And that's exactly what they did.
Steve Barry joins us. His book just came out today as we're speaking, The 14th Colony. It's another Cotton Malone thriller. And we're about, probably an hour away from Cincinnati. We have a lot of listeners in the Cincinnati area. And Cincinnati's a big part of this story, but not in the way some listeners might think.
Oh, no. You have a collection. You have a very unique connection here because of the Society of Cincinnati.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, it's the oldest fraternal society in America. It's America's first fraternal society. The Masons came from Europe, but this one was born here out of the Revolutionary War. It still exists today. It's still there. But Cincinnati itself was started by a member of the society with the hopes that other members would come out and settle there. And so they gave the city the name Cincinnati after Cincinnatus, which the society is named for, who was a Roman general who became emperor for a short period of time. And the society figures into the novel. I was fascinated by them, so I included them in the book. And I gave them a few extra bits and pieces and purposes that don't exist in real life. Just a little, made them a little more nefarious than they really are.
Do you have to be a descendant of a Revolutionary War soldier to be in the society?
Yes.
Okay.
And only one descendant per family can be a member.
I see.
And it's a hereditary. And that was another reason they got in trouble early on. The colonists resented the society because it smacked of nobility because of the hereditary aspects of it. And those still exist today, yes.
Are women allowed?
I think they have now changed that if there are no male descendants and only a female descendant, yes, they can be, yes.
You have some very tough women in your story, The 14th Colony. One of them's Russian, and the other one is a woman who you call the Riverine. Is that the right pronunciation?
No, well, that's what she served in, yes. The
okay.
Riverines were the most, they took the most casualties of any division in the military during the Vietnam War. They're the division of the Navy that fights in rivers, and they recently have allowed women to enter their combat ranks. And so I created a character. She's great. I loved her. Sue was tough. And, I might even keep her around, come back and see her again one day. She was a great character. And she interacted with Luke very well. But we learn about the Riverines, which I didn't know much about. And it's just interesting, you know, that this particular unit now do allow women in there in combat situations.
Luke is very impressed with Sue, and Luke is, it should be noted, that the nephew of the president, Danny Daniels, and we need to look at the time frame of this because as this story is happening, it's all very compressed. Danny Daniels is just about ready to leave office.
Yep, and I timed it, you know, on purpose. You know, I've had this story in my brain for several years, but I timed it to come out this year. And I wanted something dealing with the presidency, and, you know, presidential succession is quite interesting. And so Danny's time is up, and so in the context of him leaving office and a new president coming in, I wove this tale, this 48-hour tale that Cotton gets caught up in, and this flaw in the 20th Amendment. And so, as I said, none of that was unintentional. It was all there. Now, Danny's not going away. He'll be back. He's going to come back next year, and he's actually going to get a new job, and he's going to have a bigger role in the novels in the future.
He's also about ready to get a divorce, which
he is.
You know, no president's gotten divorced after they were in office, right? Just before?
No, like none have been divorced.
Ronald Reagan was divorced he was elected.
Divorced beforehand,
right, okay.
Yes. But never during or after, no. And so he'll be the first to that. I knew long ago, and this all started way back in Jefferson Key about 5 years ago. And so I knew eventually that, you know, that marriage would end and I would be able to move him on because I wanted him to move on to some other things. I love the character Danny Daniels, and I don't want to see him go away.
And that's another potential love story coming up in a future book, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, when I created the love angle with Stephanie Nell and Danny Daniels, my publisher at the time did not want me to do that. They were very adamant that they did not want a president loving someone other than his wife. even though there were serious problems in their marriage and their marriage was essentially over, they did not want that. And of course, nothing improper happened, you know, at all between these two characters ever, but they didn't want me to have any of that relationship in there. And it's one of the few times that I actually bucked my publisher and I just insisted and said, no, this is what I want in there. And I'm glad I did, because the relationship has evolved nicely. And now they're at a point where they can go and be together and I can keep them together.
Was that one of your editors at Random House that was balking at that?
Publisher at Random House, one level above the editor.
Wow.
Yeah, they did not. they did not want that in there. She was adamant. She didn't like it, and it was one of the few times that I actually stood my ground and said, "No, I'm going to keep this in there and keep it there." And as I said, I kept their relationship very proper at all times. There was nothing improper at all, except that they knew that they felt for one another. And at some point, you know, that moved on to something more as the marriage ended.
Of course, your publisher was raising objections long before this current political campaign. Things were so much more innocent then.
I know when I wrote this book, I wrote this book in 2014, turned it in 15.
Uh-huh.
So nothing that's going on now had, you know, it even come up at that point. So it's just interesting that the presidential race is sort of a hot topic now, which is very nice. I mean, there's nothing bad about that, you know, that things are hot and people are discussing it and talking about it. That can never be a bad thing, and this book fits in nicely with that discussion.
Let's talk a little bit about Cotton. As the story opens, he has been sent on a mission into the far reaches of the former Soviet Union, to a lake that has always fascinated me, and I'm guessing that you're intrigued by it too.
I was. I've seen many, many, many pictures of Lake Baikal, and I would love to go see it. You know, it's got 20% of the world's fresh water in it. It sits out in a very isolated part of Siberia. It freezes so solid in the winter that they can actually lay railroad tracks across it and run a railroad over it. I mean, that's amazing. They don't even know how deep it is. It's, you know, it's a couple of miles deep in some places. It's a massive place. And I just thought it would be a cool setting to start the novel there.
And, of course, as we expect from you, we have instant action. When Cotton Malone is on the scene, suddenly everybody's trying to kill him.
Well, it's a thriller, so things have to be thrilling, and they have to start immediately, and you can't drag it around. So in my case, you know, always in chapter one, Cotton's in big trouble. And this time he gets himself caught up in something. And I came across that plane, the AN-2, which is a Russian plane that can actually fly backwards in a headwind, which I thought was amazing. And so I had to factor all that in and put it in there. It was just too cool to leave it out.
My guest is Steve Barry. His book is The 14th Colony. He joins us on the telephone from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And you're listening to the Book Nook. We produce it right here in the studios of WYSO every week. And thanks for tuning in. Steve, we were talking at the beginning of the show about the fact that you're in Tulsa because you're there for an event for History Matters. Do you want to tell us what this organization is and what it does?
It's a foundation that my wife Elizabeth and I created in 2009, and we go around and we help communities raise money for historic preservation. We also bring awareness to historic preservation. We do it in a variety of ways. Tonight we will be in Tulsa and we're doing a meet and greet and a book talk signing and a interaction with folks. You pay to come. Tickets, $75, I think they are. All of that money that we raise here tonight will go to the restoration of a local historical house, the Alice Robertson House here. And she was the second woman ever elected to Congress, and she's from here, and they want to restore her home. So that money will go to that project. We do not charge to come. We do not charge expenses or anything. We actually pay our own way to come. And we've done around 100 of these projects around the country, and we've raised $1 million for historic preservation. So it's a way for us to give back, and we do around 4 to 6 History Matters events a year.
And I know one of the historic structures that you've helped is one that's near and dear to our hearts here in Southwest Ohio. That's the Thurber House in Columbus.
Oh, yes. Yes, we did a History Matters event there a couple of years ago. There we did our writer's workshop. That's the way we really do it to raise money. We teach a four-hour course on writing, and you buy your way in with a contribution, and all of that money goes to the project too. We've taught around 3,000 students, and some of those are right there in Columbus when we did the project there about 2 years ago, I think it is.
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and my guest is Steve Barry. His new novel is The 14th Colony. And Steve, I know you've been putting out these books, the Cotton books, every year like clockwork for the last decade or so. And since you wrote this one a couple years ago, I'm guessing you probably already put the next one to bed.
Oh, yeah. I've already turned in. Next year's book is turned in and finished, yeah, because I wrote it last year, turned it in this year. And I'm writing actually the book that will be published in 2018 that I'll turn in next year. So you stay a full year ahead in the book business, actually a little more than almost two years ahead, but that's just the way it works from the standpoint of production goes. So yes, the next one's done. It's a Cotton Malone adventure. It deals with the Smithsonian, which I've been wanting to include in a Cotton Malone novel for a long time. I serve on the Smithsonian Libraries Board, so I'm very involved with the Smithsonian. And it's a great adventure. It's a great adventure story that Cotton gets caught up with, something from the Civil War and the Smithsonian. And you're going to finally learn how Cotton got his name. It's going to be explained in the book.
Is that how he got the name Malone? Just kidding.
Cotton Malone. Cotton, yeah. Yeah.
Steve Barry joins us. All right. You told us you're working on the one after that for 2018. You can give us a teaser, or is that?
I can't do that. It's too far out.
Okay.
I'm afraid somebody will steal it. But it's a Cotton Malone book. It's going to be a little bit different. Cotton Malone book. It's going to have a little twist to it. It's going to be something very interesting. But I will say this: it's going to deal with an issue that's very. It's going to be very timely at the time of its publication.
Okay.
That I will say.
All right. Well, I think we have just enough time to ask you one more question, and the question is, what is this Magellan Billet Agency? Tell us about it. We have listeners who have never heard of such a thing.
Well, I created it within the Justice Department because Cotton needed to work for some type of agency, and I didn't want it to be, you know, a traditional intelligence agency. I wanted it to be a little different, so I created this agency in which the members of it are 12 agents, and they're basically lawyers, though that got changed a little bit as time went on. They don't have to be lawyers any longer. And they deal very specialized assignments for the Attorney General and for the White House, and they're international and domestic. And I needed a name for it one day, and it's just the weirdest thing, but I just needed a name, and all at once, just in my brain, it popped, Magellan Billet. I don't know where that came from. It just popped into my brain, and I really like the name. It's different. It's a little bit unique and, you know, connotates a lot of interesting things with Magellan and around the world and everything. And so this agency still exists there, and Stephanie Nell heads it up. And Cotton gets drawn back into it, you know, periodically in each one of the novels. But those of you who've not read my books, you know, it's something from the past, something you don't know a lot about, something you may want to know more about, something real, though, that still has relevance today. And I weave a modern-day thriller around that thing.
Our guest has been Steve Barry. His new Cotton Malone thriller is The 14th Colony. And I'm going to guess that the previous book, The Patriot Threat, probably just came out in paperback. Is that right?
It did in January, yes.
All righty.
It's in stores now.
Well, we really appreciate your time today, Steve.
Thank you for having me. And if the readers want to know anything more about me or the books, they can go to steveberry.org. Everything's there.
You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.